74. Swiftspren. Today I leaped from the tower for the last time. I felt the wind dance around me as I fell all the way along the eastern side, past the tower and to the foothills below. I'm going to miss that. From Drawer 10-1, Sapphire. Vale leaned her head to look in through the window of the old broken shop in the market. Grund the urchin sat in his usual place, carefully stripping down an old pair of shoes for the hog's hide. As he heard Vale, he dropped his tool and reached for a knife with his good hand. He saw that it was her, then caught the package of food she tossed to him. It was smaller this time, but actually had some fruit. Very rare in the city these days. The urchin pulled the bag of food close, closing his dark green eyes, looking reserved. What an odd expression. He's still suspicious of me, she thought. He's wondering what I'll someday demand of him for all this. Where are Ma and Selland? Vale asked. She had prepared packages for the two women who stayed here with Grund.
Moved out to the old tinker's place, Grund said.
He thumbed upward, toward the sagging ceiling.
Thought this place was getting too dangerous.
You sure you don't want to do the same?
Nah, he said. I can finally move without kicking someone.
She left him and shoved her hands in her pockets, wearing her new coat and hat against the cool air. She'd hoped that Kolinar would prove to be warmer after so long on the Shattered Plains or Urethiru. But it was cold here, too, suffering a season of winter weather. Perhaps the arrival of the Everstorm was to be blamed. She checked in on Muri next, the former seamstress with three daughters. She was of second none, high ranking for a Dark Eyes, and had run a successful business in a town near Revelar. Now she trolled the water ditches following storms for the corpses of rats and kremlings. Muri always had some gossip that was amusing but generally pointless. Vale left about an hour later and made her way out of the market, dropping her last package in the lap of a random beggar. The old beggar sniffed the package, then whooped with excitement.
"The Swiftspren," he said,
nudging one of the other beggars.
"Look, the Swiftspren,"
he cackled, digging into the package, and his friend roused from his sleep and snatched some flatbread.
"Swiftspren?" Vale asked.
"That's you," he said. Yup, I heard of you. Robbing rich folk all through the city, you do. And nobody can stop you, 'cause you're a spren. Can walk through walls, you can. White hat, white coat. Don't always appear the same, do ya?"
The beggar started stuffing his face. Vale smiled. Her reputation was spreading. She'd enhanced it by sending Ishna and Vatha out, wearing illusions to look like Vale, giving away food. Surely the cult couldn't ignore her much longer. Pattern hummed as she stretched. Exhaustion spren, all of the corrupted variety, spinning about her in the air, little red whirlwinds. The merchant she'd stolen from earlier had chased her away himself, and had been nimble for his age.
"Why?" Pattern asked.
"Why what?" Vale asked. "Why is the sky blue, the sun bright? Why do storms blow or rains fall?"
"Why are you so happy about feeding so few?"
"Feeding these few is something we can do."
"So is jumping from a building," he said, frank, as if he didn't understand the sarcasm he used. "But we do not do this. You lie, Shallan."
"Vale."
"Your lies wrap other lies."
He sounded drowsy. Could Spren get drowsy?
"Remember your ideal, the truth you spoke."
She shoved her hands in her pockets. Evening was coming, the sun slipping toward the western horizon, as if it were running from the origin and the storms. It was the individual touch, the light in the eyes of people she gave to, that really excited her. Feeding them felt so much more real than the rest of the plan to infiltrate the cult and investigate the Oath Gate. "It's too small," she thought. That was what Jasnah would say. "I'm thinking too small." Along the street, she passed people who whimpered and suffered. Far too many hunger spren in the air, and fear spren at nearly every corner. She had to do something to help. Like throwing a thimbleful of water onto a bonfire. She stood at an intersection, head bowed, as the shadows grew long, reaching toward night. Chanting broke her out of her trance. How long had she been standing there? Flickering light, orange and primal, painted a street to her left. No sphere glowed that color. She walked toward it, pulling off her hat and sucking in stormlight. She released it in a puff, then stepped through, trailing tendrils that wrapped around her and transformed her shape. People had gathered, as they usually did, when the Cult of Moments paraded. Swift Spren broke through them, wearing the costume of a Spren from her notes. Notes she'd lost to the sea. A Spren shaped like a glowing arrowhead that wove through the sky around sky eels. Golden tassels streamed from her back, long, with arrowhead shapes at the ends. Her entire front was wrapped in cloth that trailed behind, her arms, legs, and face covered. Swift Spren flowed among the cultists and drew stares even from them. "I have to do more," she thought. "I have to think grander schemes." Could Shallan's lies help her be something more than a broken girl from rural Yakaved? A girl who was deep down terrified that she had no idea what she was doing. The cultists chanted softly, repeating the words of the leaders at the front. "Our time has passed. Our time has passed. The Spren have come. The Spren have come. Give them our sins. Give them our sins." Yes, she could feel it. The freedom these people felt. It was the peace of surrender. They coursed down the street, proffering their torches and lanterns toward the sky, wearing the garb of Spren. Why worry? Embrace the release, embrace the transition, embrace the coming of storm and Spren, embrace the end. Swift Spren breathed in their chants and saturated herself with their ideas. She became them, and she could hear it, whispering in the back of her mind. "Surrender. Give me your passion, your pain, your love. Give up your guilt. Embrace the end. Shallan, I'm not your enemy." That last one stood out like a scar on a beautiful man's face. Jarring. She came to herself. Storms. She'd initially thought that this group might lead her up to the revel on the Oathgate platform, but she'd let herself be carried away by the darkness. Trembling, she stopped in place. The others stopped around her. The illusion, the Spren-like tassels behind her, continued to stream even when she wasn't walking. There was no wind. The cultists' chanting broke off, and corrupted Allspren exploded around several of their heads. Soot-black puffs. Some fell to their knees. To them, wrapped in streaming cloth, face obscured, ignoring wind and gravity, she would look like an actual Spren.
"There are Spren," Shallan said to the gathered crowd, using light weaving to twist and warp her voice. "And there are Spren. You followed the Dark Ones. They whisper for you to abandon yourselves. They lie."
The cultists gasped.
"We do not want your devotion. When have Spren ever demanded your devotion? Stop dancing in the streets and be men and women again. Strip off those idiotic costumes and return to your families."
They didn't move quickly enough, so she sent her tassels streaming upward, curling about one another,
lengthening. A powerful light flashed from her.
Go!
She shouted. They fled, some throwing off their costumes as they went. Shallan waited, trembling, until she was alone. She let the glow vanish and shrouded herself in blackness, then stepped off the street. When she emerged from the blackness, she looked like Vale again. Storms. She'd become one of them so easily. Was her mind so quickly corrupted? She wrapped her arms around herself, trailing through streets and markets. Yasna would have been strong enough to keep going with them until reaching the platform. And if these hadn't been allowed up, most that wandered the streets weren't privileged enough to join the feast, then she'd have done something else. Perhaps take the place of one of the feast guards. Truth was, she enjoyed the thievery and feeding the people. Vale wanted to be a hero of the streets, like in the old stories. That had corrupted Shallan, preventing her from going forward with something more logical. But she'd never been the logical one. That was Yasna, and Shallan couldn't be her. Maybe she could become radiant and... She huddled against a wall, arms wrapped around herself. Sweating, trembling, she went looking for light. She found it down a street, a calm, level glow. The friendly light of spheres, and with it a sound that seemed impossible. Laughter? She chased it, hungry, until she reached a gathering of people singing beneath Gnomon's azure gaze. They'd overturned boxes, gathering in a ring, while one man led the boisterous songs. Shallan watched, hand on the wall of a building, Vale's hat held limply in her gloved safe hand. Shouldn't that laughter have been more desperate? How could they be so happy? How could they sing? In that moment, these people seemed like strange beasts, beyond her understanding. Sometimes she felt like a thing wearing a human skin. She was that thing in Urethiru, the unmade, who sent out puppets to feign humanity. It's him, she noticed absently. Wits leading the songs. He hadn't left her any more messages at the inn. Last time she'd visited, the innkeeper complained that he'd moved out and had coerced her to pay Wit's tab. Vale pulled on her hat, then turned and trailed away down the small market street. She turned herself back into Shallan right before she reached the tailor's shop. Vale let go reluctantly, as she kept wanting to go track down Kaladin in the wall guard. He wouldn't know her, so she could approach him. Pretend to get to know him. Maybe flirt a little. Radiant was aghast at that idea. Her oaths to Adolin weren't complete, but they were important. She respected him and enjoyed their time training together with the sword. And Shallan? What did Shallan want again? Did it matter? Why bother worrying about her? Vale finally let go. She folded her hat and coat, then used an illusion to disguise them as a satchel. She layered an illusion of Shallan and her Hava over the top of her trousers and shirt, then strolled inside, where she found Drey and Scar playing cards and debating which kind of chowta was best. There were different kinds. Shallan nodded to them, then, exhausted, started up the steps. A few hunger spren, however, reminded her that she hadn't saved anything for herself from the day's thievery. She put away her clothing, then hiked down to the kitchen. Here she found Elokar drinking from a single cup of wine, into which he'd dropped a sphere. That red-violet glow was the room's only light. On the table before him was a sheet of glyphs, names of the houses he had been approaching through the parties. He'd crossed out some of the names, but had circled the others, writing down numbers of troops they might be able to provide. 50 armsmen here, 30 there. He raised the glowing cup to her as she gathered some flatbread and sugar. What is that design on your skirt? It seems familiar to me. She glanced down. Pattern, who usually clung to her coat,
had been replicated in the illusion on the side of her hava. Familiar? Elokar nodded. He didn't seem drunk, just contemplative.
I used to see myself as a hero, like you. I imagined claiming the shattered plains in my father's name. Vengeance for blood spilled. It doesn't even matter now, does it, that we won?
Of course it matters, Shallan said. We have Urithiru, and we defeated a large army of Voidbringers. He grunted.
Sometimes I think that if I merely insist long enough, the world will transform. But wishing and expecting is of the passions. A heresy. A good Vorin worries about transforming themselves.
Give me your passion.
Have you any news about the Oathgate or the Cult of Moments? Elokar asked.
No. I have some thoughts about getting up there, though. New ones.
Good. I might have troops for us soon, though their numbers will be smaller than I'd hoped. We depend upon your reconnaissance, however. I would know what is happening on that platform before I march troops onto it.
Give me a few more days. I'll get onto the platform, I promise.
He took a drink of his wine.
There are few people remaining to whom I can still be a hero, Radiant. This city, my son,
Storms.
He was a baby when I last saw him. He'd be 3 now, locked in the palace.
Shallan set down her food.
Wait here.
She fetched her sketchpad and pencils from a shelf in the showroom, then returned to Elokar and settled down. She placed some spheres out for light, then started drawing. Elokar sat at the table across from her, lit by the cup of wine.
What are you doing?
I don't have a proper sketch of you, Shallan said. I want one.
Creation Spren started to appear around her immediately. They seemed normal, though they were so odd anyway, it could be hard to tell.
Elokar was a good man, in his heart, at least. Shouldn't that matter most?
He moved to look over her shoulder, but she was no longer sketching from sight.
We'll save them, Shallan whispered. You'll save them. It will be all right.
Elokar watched silently as she filled in the shading and finished the picture. Once she lifted her pencil, Elokar reached past her and rested his fingers on the page. It depicted Elokar kneeling on the ground, beaten down, clothing ragged. But he looked upward, outward, chin raised. He wasn't beaten. No, this man was noble, regal.
Is that what I look like? He whispered.
Yes. It's what you could be, at least.
May I have it?
She lacquered the page, then handed it to him.
Thank you.
Storms. He almost seemed to be in tears. Feeling embarrassed, she gathered her supplies and her food, then hurried out of the kitchen. Back in her rooms, she met Ishna, who was grinning. The short, dark-eyed woman had been out earlier, wearing Vale's face and clothing. She held up a slip of paper.
Someone handed me this today, Brightness, while I was giving away food.
Frowning, Shallan took the note.
Meet us at the borders of the Revel in 2 nights, the day of the next Everstorm, it read. Come alone. Bring food. Join the feast.